This is PFW in Progress.
The pressures, and I'm not judging them, I'm not labeling them, but they are destroying their potential. There are no more shenanigans, no more tomfoolery, no more ballyhoo.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the presence of greatness.
Paul Perillo.
Double burger.
Yeah,
just double.
Shut up. I know what you ordered.
That
was it.
So
give me that sandwich.
Give me your sandwich.
I bought it.
Double burger.
Marky, Ricky, Danny, Terry, Mikey,
Davey,
Timmy, Tommy, Joey, Robbie,
Johnny. And Andy. And Andy.
Former winners include Nobel laureates, Fields Medal winners, renowned astrophysicists, and lowly.
Andy Hart.
Well, that's all. If you have any questions, I'm sure that Tom has the answers.
Some guy named Tom.
Look, you're my best friend, so don't take this the wrong way. 20 years, if you're still living here, coming over to my house to watch the Patriots game, I'll f***ing kill you.
PFW in Progress.
Sky rockets in flight, afternoon delight. Hey, afternoon delight.
Special edition time of PFW in Progress. Andy Hart, Tom Caselli, Paul Perillo with you on the eve of the great trip out to, well, I guess it's the Midwest. I was going to say out west, but more accurately, Indianapolis, Midwest.
That's right. St. Elmo Steaks for everyone in the Patriots.com family.
Central USA.
That's why they have a combine there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a little known fact.
And Andy Hart, Tom Caselli, and Brian Lowe of Patriots Video News, who is not with us because he's too cool to stick around for a little while.
Plus, we don't like him.
Yeah, plus we kind of discouraged him being
boring.
Here. We're going to...
Hey, G. Lowe, or Paul's open.
Thanks, G.
I wasn't sure which way you were going there. There was a crossroads for that.
Oh, I definitely took it as the open. There's no question.
Well, I know how
that.
You would take
Make
it.
Make sure you tell your friends you heard it on PVN.
Well, that's what we do here. We rag on each other.
Yeah, should we get on you? Or when you're not here. And we're talking about you being fat in the pool with no shirt on.
Yeah, they were running lean all last Wednesday.
We've lost the fat. What did we say? We've lost the fat
man? We lost the fat man and we're running lean.
There we go.
Fred's not here today, so I guess that kind of fits.
Yeah, well, how are we going to talk about, like, the combine and the draft without Fred?
Right, right. Next up, Joe in Pennsylvania.
All right, and just to explain a little bit of what we're going to do, because Tom and Andy are going to be leaving on Wednesday, we got together on Tuesday afternoon just to give you a little primer of what you can be expecting from those gentlemen. Both on Patriots.com. Brian Lowe, as I said, will be there. I'll have some video for you on Patriots Video News.
Boring!
We'll have the,
again, I'm confused.
We'll have the, every time I say something about Brian Lowe on Patriots
Boring!
Video News.
Boring!
And we'll have some updates for the paper as well. So if you're looking for combine information, coverage, anything, combine, this is where you're going to get it. It's Patriots.com, Patriots Football Weekly, Patriots Video News, your home. For New England,
we'll also
Patriots
be covering
coverage.
Our trip to St. Elmo's.
Absolutely. You guys going to blog that?
Yeah, well, Allison has to put up with my nonsense 365 days a year. She doesn't ask for much, and she wanted a picture of us with our steaks. So I told her I'd get her one. So maybe we'll put it on the web so you guys can see what Fred's paying $50
at work
for.
All right, so we are, as I said, going to talk a little bit about the combine. We got some other issues. Obviously, Tom Brady making some news this week with his situation.
Asante Samuel.
Pending fatherhood. More importantly, as Andy just alluded to, Asante Samuel was placed with the franchise tag on Friday. Also, some movement among the Patriots coaching staff. Brian Daboll flies the coop, the latest New England Patriot to go to New York to be with Eric Mangini. In his place, Nick Caserio, the former director of pro personnel, now will step back into coaching where he began his Patriots career as a coaching assistant. He will take over as wide receivers coach. So we have some stuff to talk about. We're going to do that here in this first hour with Tom and Andy. And then
before we fly the coop.
And then they will be flying the coop to head to Indy on Wednesday, and then it will be just me here. So you can pound me with the emails and
vacuum cleaner talk.
And vacuum cleaner talk as well.
And Gary can just hold down boring
for the whole last hour. So the emails will be coming in, I'm sure, hot and heavy, webradio@patriots.com, as they always are. But let's get first, we'll start with the combine before we move on to the Patriots-related stuff. Why don't you give the good listeners here, guys, an idea of what to expect from you guys over the next 4 or 5 days?
Well, we'll have at least 2 stories, if not more, up per day, starting on Thursday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you'll have everything that happened at the Combine, the players, the notes, the quotes, everything that happened. Andy,
GMs, coaches,
yes, coaches,
not just prospects. You know, we might bump into people.
You never know who you're going to see in that hallway.
We're there to be the eyes and the ears of Patriots fans, and hopefully, like Tom said, put 2 to 3 stories up per day, and most of it slanted towards the Patriots. You know, we're not just going to be doing the USA Today feature on Joe Thomas or some random guy. We're going to be looking to find people that either fit the Patriots system, you know, could be a potential pick at 24, 28, second round, have connections to the Patriots, whether it's Florida guys that might have talked to Bill, you know, anything that some way ties into, obviously, the Patriots is the angle we take. So I think that's how we're a little bit unique in the coverage. And we'll give you all the general stuff, too. We'll have little, you know, if there's a big quote from anybody, you know, one of the big names, we'll have it.
And
but
you never know what you're going to fall into. Last year, you know, I fell into the Jason Avant, Rodney Harrison story.
Yep.
You did the Denny Green thing about how he said the Patriots were kind of lucky how they built their,
right,
you know, their dynasty.
So there's always plenty.
That's the exciting thing about it, is you never really know who's going to say what, but we'll be there to record it all.
And it is a little different. You know, I think, you know, having covered some Super Bowl media days, those are all sort of prepackaged, say the right thing, not that interesting to really anybody, in my opinion. Whereas this is the same setup. It's, you know, hundreds of media types and hundreds of players. But for some reason, I guess because they're so young and they're not tied into teams yet, you get a lot more just interesting stories, quotes, notes, anecdotes, a lot of stuff comes out of Indy, I think,
well,
this
week.
Well,
it's new. You know, they're college kids, so the stories that maybe at a Super Bowl that we're already familiar with, we don't know them yet.
But even
they're
that,
making,
I just feel like
stories.
But I think they kind of sometimes they want to get things off their chest. Like I remember last year, Chad Jackson said that him and Chris Leak had to go to Urban Meyer and ask him to put in plays from the previous year because they were having trouble with his offense. Now I'm thinking maybe Chad Jackson should do the same thing with Bill Belichick. but you hear guys like, I think guys are trying, like I remember Frosty Rucker, I think it was, or someone from USC was telling their story on what happened, and I think guys are trying to get their version of what happened out
and
there.
They're not tied to anybody.
Right.
They've left the old coach, the old school, the program, and they're not yet tied to a new one, so they don't have to rein themselves in with any specific person in mind. They're trying to impress. So
they're selling themselves.
Right, they're selling themselves. So some of it you take with a grain of salt and know this is a little bit of a sales pitch. You know, we joke about all the time, A.J. Nicholson sort of spinning his off-the-field transgressions and trying to put a smiley face and make it all sound good. You're going to get some of that, but even that's interesting, the way it comes about, the way you see these guys spin. You know, some guys who we believe, some guys who you just laugh because you say, he's standing up there lying.
Right. And
so,
and I also think the demeanor. Some people are like, yes, sir, no, sir, like very respectful. Others don't look very excited to be there. And I'm thinking to myself, this is your whole life.
Right.
I mean, this is the first step in the process that could set you for life. And they just look like they don't even want to be
there. And some are blowhards.
Yes.
Who are telling you how great they are. So
you
have
Cutler.
That whole. Yeah, you have. Yeah. He wasn't blessed with a lot of talent around him.
That's how he single-handedly turned the Vanderbilt program around when he was there.
So you have a ton of different perspectives that I don't think you really get in a lot of other places. And it's all fresh. It's all new. As you said, Paul, we don't really know. But a guy I expect is Patrick Willis is going to be the yes, sir, no, sir. From everything I read on him, he's one of those Southern boys and yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, sort of the perfect package in theory. So he's a guy to keep an eye on that we'll have some fun with.
So those are the kinds of angles that I think that Tom and Andy will be looking for and they'll surely be tracking down because that's how we try to attack it. Rather, like Andy said earlier, we don't really necessarily want to just give you one big feature and tell you everything there is to know about one or two prospects. We want to try to get as much, you know, broad of a base as we can possibly get. And we'll be looking at some specific story ideas, one in particular that Tom is going to be tracking down, probably for the paper, talking to some guys about the transition between defensive end and outside linebacker that Belichick talks about all the time being a difficult one. Stuff like that rather than, you know, just, you know, a feature story on, you know, four or five different individual players. That we can do when we draft players. We certainly give you plenty of that. So that's what you have to look forward to over the next four or five days. And there's a lot of stuff.
Unless you're Andy, like when someone like Vince Young speaks, that's
right.
really not important to us because the Patriots aren't going to draft Vince Young. But while I was interviewing,
I was right on him. He's a superstar.
While I was interviewing, you know, quality receivers like Hank Baskett, Andy went running over to Vince Young just so he could say he was there.
Right. Just so he could say, hey, I talked to Vince Young at the combine.
But those are the guys that
like, I know greatness.
Said that, I mean, when he comes out, guys like that, it was, you know, huge, huge crowd.
Well, they already have entourages. That's the funny thing. You know? They're not even really anybody yet, and they already have their entourages with them. And then you get the other guys that, you know, we'll have fun with just the guy. Was the guy from was it Williamson, the offensive lineman from LSU last year? I like those ones where you just get a table with a guy and it's
those are the best
two
ones.
Or three reporters and you're just talking and you know you get little things. Or when Gradkowski, we were talking about Kazier and the fact that he played with him
and Richard Marshall was basically just you and I, and he ended up being a second round pick and a starter most of his rookie year. So you never know who's going to be sitting at that table. But, you know, I'm sure this year Calvin Johnson will have a huge...
He'll be one of the superstar guys.
Because he's one of those guys, too, who's very intelligent, who seems to be, you know, has everything. So he'll be one of the big
ones. An interesting one that I kind of want to watch is Jamarcus Russell, because he wasn't necessarily the superstar quarterback.
I agree.
Now, all of a sudden, he's going to be the first overall pick, maybe.
And now, has he said what he's doing at the combine yet?
No,
Is he throwing or anything? I imagine he won't. Probably.
I know Quinn's not throwing, right?
Right. He's not throwing.
But that really bugs me.
Yeah, it bugs them, too. I mean, you talk to some of the coaches
It doesn't hurt their draft stock.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I agree with you. I think it's stupid, and it bugs me, and it bugs the coaches and everything. But if you're going to take Jamarcus Russell, you're going to take him, and it's not going to matter if you throw.
I just don't understand why you wouldn't.
It's foolish not to draft a guy because of that.
Why wouldn't you?
But I think
if you
have
a great combine,
guy like Cutler, who isn't guaranteed to go number one, I think it helped him last year to go out there and fling the ball around.
I don't understand the guys who think it's going to hurt them somehow.
Maybe someone like Brady Quinn, who isn't as accurate as some people think.
But he's still going to have to be not accurate when he has his pro.
No,
you know what I mean?
He's got to throw at some point before he gets drafted.
Right. And
it's the agents whispering in the ear.
But I don't get the mentality. If I'm a player and the agent says that, I go,
why?
Why?
Because they say, well, you have your own receivers, you'll have this, you'll have, you know, it's you'll be able to do it on your terms instead of throwing a guy you don't know.
And I've heard enough. I've always thought if you have multiple chances, do it because they'll consider all of them when they're looking at you.
Right.
And I've heard all the GMs and coaches say, we always, you know, take it for, you know, if a guy's here and doesn't have a good one and has a great one, well, we look to the higher
one. Body of work.
Yeah. And
besides, if Brady Quinn's in Indianapolis and throws a strike and the receiver drops it, I don't think they're going to downgrade Brady Quinn because the receiver dropped the ball. They're going to downgrade the receiver for not being able to catch.
And plus, they know what the route the receiver's running, where the ball needs to be. And if the ball hits the ground, but it was a good throw in the right spot, they know that.
Right? And I think especially now in this era, these kids now prepare specifically for all the tests that they get at the combine.
Right.
And we've seen so many features over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, ESPN, NFL. Guys, they're showing guys behind the scenes at these academies
preparing for them.
that basically their sole purpose is to prepare for the combine. And then they don't go to the combine. They don't participate in the combine. I don't really understand.
Well, that's another argument,
too. I agree with Andy.
Some people say, well, the combine's so early, they want more time to prepare with those people so that they can get, you know, shave a tenth off the 40. Well, okay, so you shave a tenth off.
Yeah, you still do your pro
you're
day.
You're still doing it either way.
And I mean, you're a kid from USC or Notre Dame. You're still doing a pro day.
Well,
Ohio
unless
State.
I do great. That's the other thing I've always said. You know, it's like when you take the SATs. Well, if you kick the butt of the SAT the first time, you can sit back and relax. You've already succeeded.
Right.
If you go out to the combine and run a 4.27, yeah, I'm going to stand on what I ran at the combine. I'll run some routes for you if you want me to, but I'm not running the 40. You know, just stick with the better one.
But it's usually just mostly it's just quarterbacks.
Well, it changes, and it seems like some years a lot of guys,
Bush
a few announce they're not doing it, and then others follow suit, and then some years guys do it, and others get kind of pushed into it. There was that story from a couple of years ago where
peer pressure.
We wouldn't do it, and then all of a sudden, they decide, well, if everybody else is doing it, I'm going to do it. I think there should be some of that. I like to see a little bit of a competition. That's why the talk of televising more of it and allowing fans in, to me, that gives me another view on a guy of how competitive he is, how he reacts when there's a little pressure and a little spotlight on him. I mean, you want a guy who's going to shine and rise to the occasion, not, well, I'm not quite prepared, so I don't know if I should really do it today. Well, is he going to be quite prepared for that January playoff game? Or who? I want a guy that's going to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it's funny because even the smallest little things, you talk about putting some competition into it to see how a guy reacts. It can be the most innocent little thing that you add to it. I mean, I remember even coaching, you know, high school kids in baseball. You'd just have a regular practice going, and all of a sudden you'd say, all right, now, you know, whatever. You get to hit as long as you get a hit. You know, there's no limit to your hitting. And all of a sudden, the guy will be hitting line drives everywhere, and all of a sudden you say, all right, you get two outs. You know, he pops one up, and he hits a little grounder back. It changes. When all of a sudden, when there's something on the line, you see a guy's performance change. And I think that for all of those reasons, I would encourage my clients to participate in the combine and show everybody. I mean, unless you just don't have the confidence, and I don't see these guys having confidence as being a big problem.
I think
problem.
It's the agents.
It is.
And I think it affects it even further down the draft. Because, Andy, if you remember last year, I was watching a lot of the quarterback stuff on TV in our room, and I mentioned Kellen Clemens to you, and I said, boy, this guy hit every pass. So maybe he caught the Jets' eye enough to say, you know what, instead of liner, We'll go with Ferguson like we were originally going to do, and we got this kid Clemens who's really showed us something here. So maybe guys down the line improve their draft stock and affect teams drafting higher up in the draft what they're going to do, because Leinart was nowhere to be found. Right. He didn't do anything.
The only guys I personally think who shouldn't do something, and I don't know if Bush is going to do it, but if you're coming off an injury and you're not sure you're
100%.
Quite right,
you
don't want to go out there and really lay an egg and set yourself back and re-injure something. Those are the only guys that I think should consider not doing it. But if you're healthy and you're fine, just do it. If you don't have a great day, you still have the chance to have the pro day and have a great day.
And wasn't that part of Lendale White's situation last year? Wasn't he dealing
with
those?
He said he had a hamstring injury.
That's what he said.
He also said he was 250-some pounds.
Right.
And
I'm saying he was a fat.
But Bush is going to be interesting because we were talking about him. Here's a guy who's going to be a top 10 draft pick, has an injury, and has kind of fallen off the map.
Right.
No one's talking about him. I mean, that's a guy, you get him in the second round, that's like stealing. So he'll be another guy that we'll keep an eye on and watch. I would imagine he probably won't do a lot at the combine.
Right, and he's going to be a guy they're really going to focus on because they seem fixated on his weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
If he weighs in here and then he's like 10, 15 pounds lighter come pro day, whenever that is, they'll say, well, you know what, that was... He had a broken leg. He couldn't do it, but he's focused. He's getting in shape. You know, maybe his stock rises then when they see what he can do in the next month or two.
Yeah, and the other thing, and Tom, you were alluding to, it seems like there's more players participating now than there used to be. But you also see that when we go through the results and we're computing the averages and stuff, a lot of them might do a couple of the things, but they don't do, you know.
Right.
All of them.
You know, it's always the easiest to compile the average 40 time because that's the one it seems like half of them skip.
Right.
You know, at various positions. But, you know, I guess it is improving. I think that the NFL is doing a good job of kind of exerting a little pressure on the whole system and getting more and more of the athletes to participate. But I think that's going to be something really – I always look forward to it when you guys go out there. There's a lot of stuff. We learn a lot of stuff. So that's something to keep an eye on over the next couple of days. Let's kind of switch gears a little bit and get to some of the news here with the Patriots. Specifically, let's talk about the Samuel situation, because I think that's the biggest news. Not a surprise to anyone here on PFW in Progress, because I think we all felt if Samuel was going to be back, it was going to be through a franchise situation. Now, everybody understands the rules. This doesn't prohibit the Patriots from continuing to negotiate with Asante and his agent. It's Alonzo Shavers, I believe, right?
Yes.
Alonzo Shavers. So there's still a possibility they could work something out here. But I think what this does, at least for the time being, this effectively takes him off the market, because I just don't see a team coughing up a pair of first-round picks for a guy who really has had one great year.
No way.
Right.
Would you guys agree that if you were going to give up two first-round picks, the guy's name's got to be like Manning or Brady?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be that kind of player if you're going to give up. Not Samuel. No way.
No. Yeah, I agree with that. And the only question I have is the immediate reaction from the Samuel camp was they sort of downplaying the displeasure with the tag and saying all along, and it remains our focus to get a long-term extension in New England.
Right.
Do we believe that, or is that just kind of playing the game right now?
I think it's probably a little bit of playing the game, but I also think it's playing the game well.
Because they alluded to before the tag that they wouldn't be happy. It's like they were kind of trying to bully the Patriots into not tagging him, but now that he's officially tagged,
right,
they're reining that in.
But he also, if you remember, when I think both papers, the Globe and the Herald, had the comment from Shavers at the time, and I know what you're talking about, Andy, but I think Shavers put it at, there's a couple of different ways that teams use that tag. One is to kind of buy themselves some time, and the other is to just protect themselves and to continue to negotiate. As long as they're doing it in good faith, we'd be okay with it.
Right.
So maybe that's an indication that he feels they are doing it in good faith. They want their goal
or
is
at least hoping.
Yeah, and like you said, he's you know, it's a preemptive strike. You're trying. You don't want to ruffle the feathers
until you have to, I guess.
Unless it really have to. And I don't think that he wants any part of a holdout. I mean, I don't think any player necessarily wants to hold out.
Okay,
the players want a contract. That's first and foremost. They want the money they feel they deserve. They don't want to be sitting on the sideline.
Let's do the totally irresponsible thing here.
Sure.
Which is what we generally do.
Especially with Fred's not here.
Without and knowing any of the details of any discussions that are going on right now, do you think the Patriots tagged Asani Samuel with the intent that before this season they will have a long-term deal, or they tagged him with, in the back of their minds, that in all likelihood he's going to play the franchise tag this year?
I would go with the latter. I think that they want to sign him long term, but I don't think that they think they'll be able to do that.
Tom?
I agree with Paul.
They're doing exactly what the agent doesn't want him to do.
Probably.
In theory.
Probably.
I think they're trying to sign him, but like Paul said, I don't know if they're going to be able to put up the money that he's looking for.
I have to think that even if he gets on the open market, now Shavers, if he's going to do his job properly, as a franchise guy, he's going to go out and peddle his guy to as many teams as he can to find out what the market is. He's going to watch Nate Clements very closely, find out where that situation stands, because, I mean, that's kind of 1 and 1A. Now, we talked about this in the past. I would put Clements at a notch above Samuel, both in talent and in the fact that he's done it for a longer period of time. But I got to think Samuel is going to be worth almost as much, if not.
Or you can look the other way. I mean, if you're a scout and you have truly broken down every single play Asani Samuel has made.
You think Clements is what he
says,
is and Samuel's still going?
Yeah, Clements has leveled out. There's a chance that Asani Samuel still has another year or two of improvement before he tops out as the best corner in the game. Now, again, that's projection. It's hard to do. But if you're a scout and you're looking in your system, and all, I think you could at least make the argument. You know, he had his best year in year four. That's when he should be kind of getting to the best. Maybe he has another year or two of growth left in him. You could argue that he's still improving.
So now, so that was the situation on Friday, and Belichick, you know, just had his regular kind of, that he pulled out of his file, that statement there that he makes when they make moves such as these. Nothing really too surprising. I know there was some speculation that the Patriots wouldn't be franchising Samuel because that would give him a cap hit number of, just under $8 million. Whereas, Tom Brady's cap hit is supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $11-plus million. A lot of money for two guys. PFW in Progress never bought that for a second.
No.
We all felt that if Samuel was going to be back, this is how it was going to happen. And I think that looking at it that way, two guys making that much, very short-sighted way of looking at it. Andy and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. There's probably 8, 10, 12, 15 guys you could bunch together toward the bottom of the roster that could combine for a similar kind of cap hit.
Right.
As Brady and Samuel would be combined. What's the difference? I mean, you break up your roster, you spread the money as evenly as you can, and you do the best you can. But when you have players that separate themselves the way Brady has throughout his career and the way Samuel did in 2006, it costs money.
Yeah, the Bears are putting in a lot of money for two linebackers, but you know what? That's how they want to build their team.
Right.
So they don't really care.
It's a great comparison. That's the backbone of their defense, and the defense is the backbone of the team, is Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, and they're going to make sure that they do whatever they can to hold on to that.
Plus, we've talked about this a lot. With the way the financial landscape is changing, the cap numbers for franchise players haven't really caught up to the salary cap. It's going up at a higher rate. It's going to change now in the next couple of years, but $7 million for 1 year is very palatable. I mean, it's
wait till you see what Clements signs
right.
for.
I mean, when you're handing him a check for $20 million.
Right.
So
the only danger here for the Patriots in terms of the money is not a danger at all, because $7.79 million is not out of the ordinary for a top-flight starting cornerback. The only danger here is that the player becomes so disenchanted that he's not playing as well as he could.
Or doesn't show up, and it gets really ugly.
Then you get an ugly situation on your hands. But really, that's nothing the Patriots can control.
Right. You have to do what they had to do.
That was a no-brainer.
We all thought they were going to do it when none of us is surprised, and I think we all feel like it was the right thing to do.
Yes. Now Samuel's gone. Briggs is gone. Freeney is gone. They've all been franchised.
Right.
But I didn't see Freeney got franchised.
Yes, Freeney got franchised last night, I believe. And that means Nate Clements and Adalius Thomas have looked like to be the two prize free agents, and that's going to be a heck of a bidding war for both those guys.
And we still got a couple of days here, too. I don't know if those other teams, I don't know if Baltimore has anybody else.
I don't believe Clements is going to be.
No, he's not.
He had the agreement.
Unless Buffalo really wants to be a bunch of jerks.
So Thomas would be the only other one, and if he gets franchised, then you're basically March.
Then you got, no free agents.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens there. But
Graham goes cha-ching.
But that was also another aspect of this offseason. Andy, you alluded to the market size getting a little bit bigger, the money's available being a little bit bigger. A lot of people speculated that the tags would be used a little bit more. They were hardly used at all last year.
Right.
And people speculated that they would be used a little bit more often this year, and so far we've seen that.
Well, last year was a tough year, too, just because of all
the
uncertainty.
CBA, yeah. You couldn't do it.
I mean, that's Bill, when we talked to him, not complained, but referenced that fact. You just don't know, and you don't know the rules you're working with. You don't know how you're playing the game. So last year was a weird year.
We know Ralph Wilson didn't understand
right.
it. So
I didn't
Well, remember when they extended that deadline to get in cap compliance, if you recall.
It's a very complex proposal, and I really didn't understand it.
Now leave me alone while I go eat my pea soup.
See, I didn't think I was a dropout, but maybe I am.
See, he took a bad rap for that. Because they're still trying to figure out what the agreement was.
Well, I think the rap was that you probably shouldn't tell reporters that you don't understand.
Oh, I know.
I'm sure 29 other owners probably didn't understand. There was probably like two or three that did.
And he had the stones to stand up and say, why the heck are we voting?
Or he's senile, one or the other.
I would have been one of the 28 other ones in the back of the room like I was in school, just nodding my head saying, oh, yeah, I get it.
Well, there's definitely owners that do that. Oh, the cool owners are doing it? Jones and Kraft? Oh, I'm on board. He didn't do it.
All right, so that was the big player news. On the coaching side, the whole Dable situation. Now, I was not here for this. I'll let you guys kind of fill everybody in on that. How did that come about? Brian Dable jump ship, goes to the Jets?
Brian Dable jump ship. Hasn't been a lot of details come out about this from either the New York media or the New England media. So it's a little bit of speculation, but basically it sounds like his contract ran out here and he chose to leave, join the Jets staff. Now we've sort of heard from some people that he might be the offensive coordinator in the waiting at the Jets, that he's been told that there's a good chance.
Whisperers, You got some whisperers?
Yeah, some whisperers, yeah. And that Schottenheimer might be out there. Now, I don't know if if they're just assuming he's going to get a head coaching job next year because he interviewed this year and seemed to be a front runner in Miami and then pulled out. There's going to be jobs available next year, clearly, as there are every year. But either way, it sounds like he saw a place where he could make that jump to offensive coordinator and made that decision to go there. Obviously, there's some comfort there with a guy he was an assistant with for 6 or 7 years or however, 5 or 6 years. But he's going to go there. I don't think they've officially announced his role with the Jets yet for this coming season.
They haven't specified what he's doing yet.
So he'll be some sort of offensive assistant. And then
he's going to be one of those assistant head coach slash something?
It didn't sound like that. It sounded like he's just going to be, who knows, passing game coordinator or something.
And I think he did a good job here last year. And
I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, he did a great job. And I don't think necessarily losing the receiver coach hurts the Patriots that much, but now the Jets have another guy that knows the players here, knows the coaches here, that can talk with the staff, talk with the players. So I think in that aspect, it's kind of big that a division rival took another coach away from the Patriots.
And they have an idea of how the Patriots do things from the inside.
Right.
And I think that is somewhat important. I'm talking about from the week-to-week game planning kind of attack mode. They know how the Patriots want to attack the other teams.
And not even just a big scheme attack, but a small picture attack, as in when Chad Jackson's lining up, you know, he's telling a cornerback, look for him to do this because he's trying to set this up, or little tendency.
Or he's going
to
block.
Or it's a running
play. It's a running play.
But just little tendencies and little, you know, minor details of route running and offense that he can tell that defense. Plus, I think it's a loss here because you have a guy like Chad Jackson who couldn't develop this year. And I agree with you, Tom. I think Dable did a pretty good job with not much to work with last year.
So a lot of other guys that seemed to develop as the year went on.
Yeah. Right. And now you're taking a guy who's still so important to the offense, and you're throwing a different coach at him. And we've already sort of heard from his high school coach that, you know, changes in coaches and systems and haven't always been the best thing for Chad Jackson. He's got a new face to deal with. Now, I know it's the same system and all that, but still, there's a change there, a personality, a style, whatever. Who knows if that hurts him a little bit?
He could end up going in the tank, as his high school coach said, as a sophomore.
Boy, poor guy as a sophomore. Make one little mistake and your coach is talking about it on the radio.
I mean, we're as tough on Chad Jackson probably as anybody, but I think that comment was utterly ridiculous for a high school coach to say that.
I gotta tell you.
14-year-old kid.
Who's watched that TV show about his team would tell you he's utterly ridiculous.
So there was no shortage of news, you know, last week in terms of the Patriots personnel and some of the decisions that came about. Nick Caserio, who, as we said at the top of the show, goes from...
As a cannon.
Director of player pro personnel. Director of pro personnel. He goes to fill the void left by Dable. Yeah, he was a college quarterback who we rave about every summer when we're writing our updates on the way. He has a great arm. And as Andy joked, and not necessarily sarcastically, had the third best arm in camp last year behind
no offense
Brady
to those
and Castle.
Other guys.
No offense.
Names we've forgotten.
No, Bramlett and Todd Mortensen. It was either Casey or Corey.
I couldn't come up
Corey.
With that Mortensen one.
Is it Corey or Casey Bramlett? I forget which one is
it. It was Corey.
Corey Bramlett. And Todd Mortensen were the two.
We could have played a game for the next hour and 45 minutes.
By the
name
way,
the other quarterback, and I would have never got
by
there.
By the way, heck of a nice guy, that Todd Mortensen.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he makes a fine, whatever he's doing now.
Had a nice PFW.
If you need car insurance, call.
Had a nice,
he's a great lettuce washer.
Had a nice PFW online, Patriots.com conversation with him one day. You know, looking for an update?
It's good.
Towards the end of camp, huh?
Sure.
But, yeah, McDaniels and Caserio went to college together at John Carroll
University.
Not John Hopkins. That's what I was going to go with. But I was like, that's not right.
I didn't think it was because I figured you would have.
They both went there as quarterbacks. And
right.
Caserio ended up beating him out or was ahead of him anyway. And McDaniels switched to wide receiver and they became a Montana to Rice kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah, maybe Nick Caserio, one of 14 players in Division III history with 8,000 yards passing.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. Can you name any of the other 13? Would you believe one?
I'm just trying to think of another, you know,
Division III
quarterback. I'm
saying one played for Mount Union.
Probably. Some system guy.
I couldn't tell you. Some system guy.
Well, those systems. Certain systems are different. You know, Texas Tech, if the guy throws for 5,000 yards anywhere else, it's impressive.
Yeah, I think of those quote-unquote systems being a little bit less prevalent at the Division III level.
Oh, come on. There's these schools that are dominant. It's the system. It's not the players. It's the coach and the system he has in place.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's a little, you know, Caserio was once throwing to Josh McDaniels in front of, you know, 72 people in Ohio somewhere, and now they're the offensive coordinator and the wide receivers coach with Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And London Baker Fletcher is on the open market. Who knows if he joins the little mix here?
I think it's Fletcher Baker, by the way.
What did I say?
Baker Fletcher. Yeah.
That's why people should stick to one name. London Baker.
London Fletcher was the way he always went.
London
as,
Fletcher
so
Baker.
He added the Baker. London Fletcher Baker.
Can't add the name before it?
Well,
what are there rules to these things?
I don't know. I suppose you're right, but.
Thank you.
It says Fletcher Baker.
I rest my case. But, yeah, he's out there, and he was another member of that team. He
That's
played
correct.
Linebacker
he
for them.
He went to that university, John
Carroll.
And he's
Carroll a
university.
Potential Patriot we've talked about as one of those veteran kind of guys. That feature's right in itself for PFW.
There you go.
Together again.
All right, now let's get to the meat of the issue here.
Oh, no. This just can't be good.
Tom Brady.
We know somebody got the meat.
Too bad Fred's not. Too bad.
That's how this happened.
Too bad Fred's not here for this one. You weren't here last week, Paul, when I brought up that I kind of wish Brady, not that I discourage running around with hot models. I don't discourage that, but I said in some ways you kind of wish he was more like Peyton Manning and just married and went home at night. And little did I know, a week later, we would be talking about Tom Brady having a child on the way.
Yeah. Now, this is going to get a lot of attention, I think, nationally, and it already has gotten a lot of attention nationally.
I'm amazed at how much attention it's gotten.
Yeah, and I don't think it's that big a deal. I think it's, I think it's worth talking about. I think for a show like ours that we have a lot of fun here, I think it's perfect for us. But in terms of football, in terms of this affecting him down the road, I don't think it matters a lick. And you know what? I really don't think his image takes a huge hit here either. And that might
be a lot of jokes I could be throwing in here. I'm trying to keep
the image of sleeping with hot women.
Yeah.
If that's not the image he wants, I'll take it.
The image is having a child out of wedlock.
Oh, well, big deal.
I mean,
we all do that.
But you know what? Well, some of us in that we are not included, but I would be one of them. But my point being,
no, but we all did things that could have led to a child out of wedlock.
But some of us were smart enough to make sure it didn't happen.
That's luck of the draw. Maybe
stuff
it broke.
Can happen.
Maybe it broke.
But my point,
maybe she poked holes in it.
Look, I'm not going to get into the theories.
Run that underwater. It's like a shower.
I'm not going to get into my theories as to how it happened and place blame because we obviously have no idea. But
I kind of know how it happened. Did you take health class?
Did you ever get that talk?
Jeez, Al Perillo dropped the ball on that one.
God almighty, can you guys be serious for even
a second? I know what you mean, like the attention, but you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like one of those popular songs that's not really rock and it's not really, Britney Spears, so it's on every station.
Right.
Because they can put it on. This gets a lot of attention because Entertainment Tonight jumps on it.
Right.
Hard copy, all those type of shows get on it. Then SportsCenter has it. The NFL Network has it. They talk about it on the radio.
And worldwide, because she's a worldwide supermodel. He's not Michael Jordan, but when you win a couple Super Bowls and you're the MVP, that's played in 85 countries and 20 languages or whatever. That game is seen all around the world, so people sort of know who Tom Brady is, and they've all seen him, raising his hands in that goofy manner after he wins the first one and grabbing his head. And so these are two people that are sort of worldwide
celebrities. You think someone just told him he was going to be a father when he did that?
I'm going to say he had a different reaction for that.
It was, get the bleep out. No, seriously, get the bleep out.
anyway, he sliced it. It sucks.
Oh. But that's the most interesting aspect of the story on some level, because I think everybody assumes he's going to take care of the kid and
speak Spanish.
Whatever, that'll work out. But the timing of it, when they broke up and she's 3 months pregnant and how this played out and how the relationship played out, because
and that's the part of it that I didn't really want to get into, because we really don't know if
I think that's the most interesting part.
It obviously it is, but we don't want,
I thought we were The View here and I was Rosie O'Donnell. I just throw stuff out there.
Well, if we're going to just throw stuff out there, I think she trapped him. Tried to trap him.
Well, you
could be.
You're kind of like Rosie O'Donnell. You both like women.
Oh. I thought you were going fat there.
I thought you were too when you thought you were talking to me or something.
I agree.
You're the Barbara Walters.
I agree, though, that she seems a little like the clingy type.
Well, I mean, the reason I say that, and again, this is just throwing it out there against the wall with no basis for it, because
speaking
we don't
against
know.
Against the wall.
But
it's where it should have gone. What? Never heard that?
Even for you, that made no sense.
Never heard that phrase?
No.
You should have been a wall shot?
Never once.
Guess I'm the only one.
Did you? Am I being the
it.
Old guy here?
No, I know what he means.
No, I know what he's talking about, but I mean, am I being the old guy here? I never heard that. I don't know.
Either way, you're the old guy here,
but
let's move on.
We know that she wanted to get married. She was quoted.
Right. And she's
older. Extensively. She's 7 years older than he is. She was looking to raise a family, get married and raise a family, and her biological clock was ticking like that.
And by all accounts, that was what pushed him away.
Right. Now, the publicist confirmed that she is more than 3 months pregnant, which would coincide with the breakup, roughly.
Right.
So you have to think, again, speculation, you have to think that he knew that she was pregnant when they broke up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I putting two and two and coming out with 17, I think that this was an attempt by her in a 3-year relationship. All of a sudden, you have a birth control problem in a 3-year relationship.
Maybe it was the first time they'd ever, done it.
Yeah, whatever. So I got to think that this was an
attempt.
The
breakup one, Andy?
I think it was an attempt on her part to keep him.
The hate bleep, as my coach used to call it.
Well, now that I understand. Now I know what you're talking about.
That's how they teach you how to roll your hips when tackling. Pretend it's the hate bleep.
Do you believe him?
I can only tell you what my coach has drilled into me.
I know we're recording this, but they're going to play it, you know.
It is actually going to go on in the air.
Again, it's the rule. Whatever's said in this room stays in this room.
All right, anyway, I don't personally think it's that big a deal. It's 2007. I think there are plenty of athletes out there that have had children out of wedlock.
But it's because he's supposedly the perfect, like,
I'm just
image
about
is everything
from
and well-maintained and... You know, people are already talking about, oh, his political career. Is this going to hurt his political career?
This helps his
road?
Political career.
That's
you
what I figure
me?
In this day and age.
I heard
he spins
talking...
this into presidential nomination.
Absolutely.
Political career?
He wants to get into politics.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Let's talk about
him.
He
wants
really
to be a senator.
Much, do you?
Huh? Well, I didn't.
When did he get drafted? Tom wants to know.
he's in his late 20s. You're already talking about him running for office.
Well, he's Senate. Alluded to it. He went to the State of the Union. He's sort of started building political ties. There's a lot of talk that a lot of his endorsement stuff he thinks about long term. He doesn't want to be tied to
things. I don't understand. So you're saying if Tom Brady ran for office in Massachusetts, they would just vote for him because he played football?
I think they would vote for him because he had a child out of wedlock.
I don't know.
The only thing,
as
they said on Dennis and Callahan this morning, the only thing that could be better, unfortunately for him, he's heterosexual. we think.
That was a joke, Andy, like the people in Nebraska who voted 98% for Tom Osborne despite the fact he was against everything the farmers wanted, and the other poor guy was fighting for all the farmers. And then once they realized what Osborne stand for, they didn't want him anymore. But
the Pittsburgh people, they didn't vote for
Swan. But I'm pretty sure if Tom Brady can just pick the office he wants in Massachusetts and just put his name on the ballot and go
home. I don't necessarily see him running for office in Massachusetts, by the way.
Well, the only thing I would say is because it seems like such a pipeline to presidential would be the only reason I think they might stay here. Because it seems like every time there's a governor or a senator from Massachusetts, the next year
they eventually lose in the presidential election.
Right. But in theory, I mean, at least you got to get in the game before you can win it.
That Dukakis was late. He's late sneaking around the chicken coop. He won a state.
If you let him hang around, come election night, he's going to win three states. And he's going to get in a tank and he's going to go say stupid stuff.
But it has been a lot of stuff going on in the last 4 days. It was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Over the whole weekend.
As soon as I left and didn't have internet, everything happened.
Brave
Where were
Samuel,
you, by the way?
Dable.
You went home.
I was home, and my parents are the only people on the planet that don't have a computer. So.
Well, was it also, what was the snow situation like?
It was pretty bad.
Still?
They got feet, yeah.
Well, I saw that they had people had 11 feet.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
It wasn't that bad. That's where Allison went to college, up there in that area, at that school. That's amazing what they got.
What school?
Oswego. SUNY Oswego. It's part of the SUNY system. But that's
up by
Syracuse.
Yeah. Okay.
That's up by Syracuse.
One of them.
They've been getting killed. We haven't
never heard of that one, though.
We haven't gotten anything.
Oh, yeah.
Here, we haven't gotten anything. We just get rain.
Yeah. Global warming, except for it's freezing.
Brutal weather. But I was joking with Andy, because usually that always happened to Andy. Whenever he went away and I got stuck doing the updates, it would be like a week like that where – one after another, you know, Asante Samuel franchise. Nick Caserio, you know, promoted to
Tom Brady signs
Phil
contract
Tom,
extension.
Tom did, you know, yeah, yeah. The day that Brady signed his contract. The day that Brady signed his contract extension was one of the times that Andy was on vacation, and I had to
saw it on a TV in a Vegas casino.
Easy updates.
Son of a...
And he gets all mad at me. Well, that's what happened this time when
Meanwhile, Andy's writing, off-season review, linebackers. did we miss one more? The Charlie Weiss, Tom Brady testified. Was that last...
Oh, that was this past week, but I don't really know much about that.
I don't know much either. He testified like 20 minutes. Basically, they asked him about being there because he was there so much with his wife, Maura. They talked about the fact, you know, I think in cross-examination, one of the things they asked him from the defensive perspective, the malpractice, you know, was he any different afterwards? And Brady said not. Mentally, not in his attitude. The only difference was the limitations he had
physically
with his leg.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, he testified, and everybody was obviously joking. I heard him joking on the radio about, you know, if you're in the jury, you know, the women are like, ooh, it's Tom Brady, and the men are like, cool, it's Tom Brady. I mean, clearly there's an aspect of that. That's why he's on the stand from the prosecution perspective or Charlie's perspective is the wow factor. Having Tom Brady there to maybe you sway one juror, it might win you the case.
Yeah, because I can tell you from talking to people in the know, it doesn't really seem like Charlie has much of a case here.
I don't think. Just me,
it's
who knows
highly,
nothing. I look at it from just, and I say, they told you it was dangerous. And
it's a highly, highly risky.
Even Charlie,
surgery.
Every time they asked him a question, it was, yes, I was told that. Yes, I was. You know what I mean? He knew everything going in. So, just looking at it from afar, I don't think he should win.
Well, here we go.
And we're wrong.
No, a mistrial declared in Weiss malpractice case. The judge declared a mistrial after a juror collapsed and several doctors, including the two defendants, rushed to his aid. And this is on
collapsed in quotes.
According to the AP, as of noon today. This today?
I can see why, because
no,
the doctor saved
night.
The guy's life.
No,
he's sure as hell not voting against them that they lost.
Couldn't you just replace that juror, though?
I guess that could sway the other jurors, too.
So
he saved one of us.
There's some up-to-date information for the
so
Charlie
Brady
Weiss.
Will have to testify again.
Smell foul play.
We'll see. But it is a very, very risky surgery. Matter of fact, a couple of years ago, and probably around the time that Charlie had it, something like, I mean, the statistics were staggering. It was something like one out of four dies or something, you know, close to that level. So this is not out of the ordinary to have complications result from this this surgery. I would find it awfully difficult.
Plus, it also,
and
obviously,
he also had one of the world's best at this particular procedure operating on
and
him.
Beyond the physical limitations, which he still clearly has some issues with the walking and the feeling in the leg, it's hard to argue that it ruined his life.
No.
You know what I mean? He's gone on to get everything he wanted. He got his dream job.
Right.
It didn't take away from his career advancement. So the risks involved were risks they told him about, and even when he received, you know, the negative aspects from those risks, he was still able to go on with his life and achieve some of the goals that he wanted. So I just think it would be hard for him to win that case. But I'm sure they'll try again. I'm sure they'll refile.
Yeah, I would think so.
And Brady will probably have to go on the stand. Maybe that'll mess up training
camp.
Was
Brady on the radio, or were they talking about the situation on the radio? Is when you were saying
No. They played like a clip of him, and then they were joking about
Okay.
You know, how it would be received from jurors and what the idea was of having him there and all that. Because, you know, half the people there are probably Patriots fans, probably more than that. Probably a little bit in awe of Tom Brady sitting on the stand and all that. So, star power.
All right. Well, you two gents are going to be heading off to the combine tomorrow. Any last word of advice? One thing that we should keep an eye out on, for on the web?
The cocktail sauce is spicy.
And the steaks,
the shrimp cocktail.
I mean, 5 inches thick. You got to see these things.
48. Mad. Can you be serious for 2 minutes?
$48 a shot. Fred's paying for those things.
Why don't you keep this for your blog? No, you got to be kidding me. According to my timepiece, we've been on the air for longer than that.
We didn't start that.
What's Gary
saying? Oh, okay.
Paul was premature as usual.
I thought we were ready to wrap up this hour here, but
we
have a little
talk
bit,
about the food.
We have a little bit more to go.
I don't
have
anything else to say. I got to be honest with you.
I think I need a new vacuum.
All right.
Mine's starting to not suck.
All right, well, we're going to have to wrap it up anyway, then, Gary. At least I'll be able to talk about vacuum cleaners with the emailers tomorrow.
Make sure you come to patriots.com. Guarantee we'll have the best stuff in the area about
daily updates, at least 2 to 3 stories every day. We understand that many of you check at work, so be sure to check in on Monday to see what you missed from Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, and we should mention, Andy, that we put them up. They'll be up later because we're going to be working until 5 o'clock.
Right.
Then we're going to go back and we're going to finish our stories, so they'll be up at night.
Right.
So make sure that's when you'll need to check for the new
stuff.
But
it's
all
don't
good.
Don't click on at 10 o'clock in the morning and say, what are those guys doing out there?
It'll be late in the afternoon. And like
we don't have a blog.
If you miss them, check in on Monday or whenever you get back to work. Waste your boss's time and money and read all our stories from Indy. Heck, even watch some video shows that B-Lo may or may not
boring.
Oh, that's right. I said B-Lo.
Boring.
It's even funnier when he's here.
Yeah, he's sulking behind the glass.
Hey, guy. All right, so that's going to do it for this, the Andy and Tom Hour. Definitely keep
which was also known as the funny, entertaining hour. Good luck with that next hour.
Yeah, we'll definitely have a hard time getting through the next hour.
Thin guys
alone.
Have left.
Although
thin guys, just because they're thinner than me doesn't mean that they're thin.
The good news, Paul, is that we pissed off a lot of people last week, so you should have some good emails to read through.
Did you guys do that?
Yeah, well, we were kind of abrasive last week.
Well, I did read one that said you wanted to fight everybody.
Oh, that was a good one.
Tom Fasali versus everyone.
That was the PFW. I was going to post it, but that was a good one. If you're wondering how I'm such a badass, is that I go to the same supplement store as Sean Merriman does, and we take the same.
I'm saying you're such a badass because you talk a good game, and then you go home and sit on your couch.
Well, I don't have to fight anymore. You only fight when you have to. I'm not out there picking fights. I don't go like to the local bar with my work boots on every night looking for a brawl. I don't live in Dartmouth. I live in Foxborough.
Put your work boots on. I like that. All right, we're going to step aside, take a quick break. We'll be back with the second hour of PFW in Progress.
Boring.
When you got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Dumoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Breaks a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs. Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to the first 400 of qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
This is PFW in Progress.
You guys are arresting me for getting thrown out of a window? I got thrown out of a window, man!
Yeah, but tell me, so what's the charge?
Disturbing the peace.
Disturbing the peace? I got thrown out of a window! What's the charge to get pushed out of a moving car, huh? Jaywalking?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
Yes. I'm looking for a gray-haired gentleman, very dark skin, Capricorn. Tell him that I went to the clinic today, and I found out that I have herpes simplex 10. And I think Victor should go check himself out with his physician to make sure everything is fine before things start falling off on the man.
Paul Perillo.
Wow.
You know, it says here that by the time the average American is 50, he's got 5 pounds of undigested red meat in his bowels.
Why are you telling me this? What makes you think I have any interest in that at all?
Well, you eat a lot of red meat.
And Andy. And Andy?
Jesus.
Andy Hart.
How you doing?
Some guy named Tom.
Just a man who wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning.
Lower your voice, for Christ's sake.
What, can a guy hear me through the wall?
Yes, he can.
And you never know, Lori might stop by.
We're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe.
You're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
It should be more natural, brother. It should flow out like this. Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.
PFW in progress.
I had to go to the bathroom. I was walking by. It looked like a nice, clean place, so I stopped.
Is that better? It's my first time on the show. Definitely my first time. The mic is on now. Very, very well done by Gary, but I gotta tell you, all lies in that open because none of those people that were promoed to be on this show, Patriots Football Weekly in Progress, are actually here except for me, which is why Gary plays the appropriate All By Myself. So all I have to say to that is we've lost the fat heads and now I'm running lead. How's that? Well done.
Well played.
All right, excellent. Well, we have Andy and Tom are well on their way to Indy as we speak. They will give you everything you need to know about the combine and probably plenty that you don't need to know, but, you know, that's the way they like to do it.
Look at that douchebag.
They're self-important kind of jobs that they do. Brian Lowe of Patriots Video News. Ah.
Boring.
That's better. He's also on hand in Indy with the boys. And we did have a cameo very briefly this morning by Fred Kirsch. Despite the fact that he's on vacation, he felt it necessary to come in for a meeting. But he was in and out. He is not going to be part of this this last hour of PFW in Progress. But that's okay.
Boring!
Because we have tons of email. You guys obviously must have stirred up the hornet's nest last week. I see, you know, very interesting subject lines like Disney World, you know, Chad Jackson rumor, compensatory picks, baby mama drama. I mean, I see a lot of very interesting subject lines. I don't know what was going on here last week in my absence, Gary, but we have a lot of emails. So I think even though it's just me and you'll get sick of the voice after a while, I'm certainly sure that I'll get sick of talking before too long. I think we could get by here. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. You can drop me a line. I'm going to say just me because it's not us. Drop me a line at webradio@patriots.com. Also, if you want to give us a call, Gary, be sure to pick up the phone in between solitaire games. 508-543-7482. There you go. Gary's very busy back there. I got to read this Disney World email right off the top here from RJ in Vegas. I don't know how Disney World became such a big part of the show last week, but I know Fred was here. And I know Fred is a huge Disney fan. And since I just came back from Florida, and yes, I did take my 2-year-old son to Disney World for one day only. It was a little cold down there. Disney is super lame, according to RJ. As an adult, I'll never go there again until I have kids. I lived in Orlando during my college years, and I went once because it was free. It was still lame. Picturing Fred with a big smile on his face riding Dumbo or It's a Small World makes me both amused and creeped out. I haven't been there in a while, but I can only imagine how good the park is now with an Aerosmith ride. Putting a buy on Disney until you have kids is a good idea, and that's RJ in Vegas. I got to agree, Gary, as an adult, there's plenty of things, there's plenty of rides there for adults that you can certainly have fun. But I think there's something about Disney World that's supposed to be for kids, and if you're there as an adult on your own, I think that's a little creepy. I have to agree with that. I don't know how Gary feels. I don't know how anybody else feels, but I have to agree with RJ. And the fact that Fred Kirsch is a big Disney fan, I think, says a lot. I think it speaks a lot to his eccentricities.
Hey, boss,
say.
You're a loser.
Absolutely. So we talked a lot in the first hour before the boys left. We actually talked a lot about the news of the day of the week with you know, with the team. Asante Samuel, first and foremost, getting the franchise tag. We went over that. We're going to address that a little bit more in detail, I think, with some of the emails that are coming in. Also, had a chance just before I came down here to do this this last hour, was on a conference call with Mel Kiper Jr., the draft guru from ESPN.
Boring!
Yeah, it was a little boring, Gary. I got to admit on that. You know, just there's a lot of names right now that don't have faces, so we don't know who they all are. And Mel is obviously so wrapped up in all this stuff that he speaks as if everybody knows every bit of detail about every player. And obviously that's not the case. I wanted to stick with it a little bit and get a couple of Patriots-specific questions in. I waited my turn for about 45 minutes. I had to come down here. I wasn't able to get. I wanted to ask a question about linebackers in the Patriots system and how he felt, you know, this current crop fits in. Now, he did talk about he thought outside linebackers was a strong group. Inside linebackers was just average, he thought. You know, defensive ends, defensive tackles, just kind of average, he thought. So, and he thought safeties were very good, whereas cornerbacks were just okay. You know, I was looking more on the defensive side of the ball, obviously. I was paying more attention to that stuff because, obviously, I think the Patriots have more needs in some of those spots than they do, you know, beyond wide receiver. And I think we all know that there are plenty of wide receivers available. Those names are obviously a little bit more household names. So, you know, everything is open. Scouting combine is set to begin tomorrow. That's on the board. Draft, trades. We love rumors, trades, anything you can give us. Send them in. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, webradio@patriots.com. Tom Brady, we have a call already? No. Well, we can. You can give us a call too, if you want to talk about the combine or whatever. Asante Samuel, Tom Brady's pending fatherhood. He came out and spoke yesterday after we did that first hour. He came back. He came out. He did issue a statement. Talked about being very excited through his agent Donald Yee.
I think he's full of sh**.
Being very excited about becoming a father, and I would have expected nothing less. Tom very rarely doesn't have the right thing to say when it comes to speaking in public. So I was not surprised to see him come forth and issue that statement yesterday. But, you know, we'll have everything is open today. There are no limitations. We have no tomfoolery by Andy Hart, no threats, no idle threats from Tom Casale, and no just utter lack of professionalism / information from Fred Kirsch. So I don't think you can really ask for anything more than that, Gary. I mean, we've pretty much eliminated, we're trimming all the fat. As I said, the fat heads are gone. We've lost the fat heads, and Perillo's running lead. So we'll start off with Bill.
This is like Patriots playbook.
Yeah, there you go. We'll start off with Bill. He says he wants to talk about the salary cap. We all like to talk about players' salaries and the cap, but where can we get the specifics? Every year we let good people go because, as Coach Bill says, we can't afford to keep everyone. Every year during various points in the season, we hear that we are 15 or 20 million or whatever under the cap limit. Every year the Pats continue their reputation as being thrifty, stingy, etc. Every year the Pats organization states that they spend the entire cap limit. So where can we get a definitive list, chart, spreadsheet, or whatever that shows how the cap was distributed, when, and to whom, and for what? If we didn't have the money to keep Deion Branch, Givens, and Vinatieri, then what did we spend the money on? Well, there's a lot there to kind of digest. Let's see. Bill continues. Bill, by the way, is in California, Whittier, California. He finishes up by saying he understands it's a complicated combination of the current year's commitments, previous year's obligations, breathing room for the inevitable guys that get hired off the street late in the year, etc. But at the end of the season, the salary distribution should be publicly available somewhere, shouldn't it? Thanks a million for a great show. Answering this question would make millions of Pats fans very happy. Well, Bill, I would say, is your salary information, I mean, unless you're a public worker or in the public sector, I don't think your salary is public information. So why do you think it should be available publicly? I don't think that it should be, number one. Now, we know a lot of individual player salaries. There are available. There's a NFLPA website that has base salaries. It does not list salary signing bonuses, roster bonuses, workout bonuses, et cetera, things of that nature. And it does not list the cap hits. there are some places that you can find some cap numbers, but none of them are official, and I want to stress that. So when we talk in terms of being whatever under or over, you know, the cap, none of that is official. Certainly not not anything that the teams are taking overly seriously. They have their books, and they're not going to open them up to the media or the public or the fans or anybody. And I don't think they should. I don't think they need to. I think it's a business that they're running, and I don't really see the need unless it's a public corporation. Why they, you know, and I think maybe we're only talking about the Green Bay Packers here. If they have to open up their books to their stockholders and whatnot, I don't really see how that should be public knowledge. But just to address a couple of these different points, I don't think it's accurate to say every year during various points in the season we hear that they are 15 or 20 million below the cap. I think that happened last year, but I can't recall a single other year that happened. Generally, I mean, I know that the Patriots have spent to the cap every year, you know, since Belichick has been, well, since the Krafts have owned the team, I know for a fact. And you kind of answered your own question, Bill, in talking about the commitments for the future. What they did last year to eat up some of that cap space was they signed Daniel Copen to an extension. They gave Richard Seymour a roster bonus that they didn't have to give them until March. They gave it to him earlier so it would be put on the 06 cap. That ate up some more of that space. Plus, you talked about all the players that you signed during the course of the year. They had 10 or 11 guys on injury reserve, so you had to sign guys to replace those players, and they get salaries as well as the guys on injury reserve. So the money eventually gets used up. And the one area before I get off this salary cap talk, Bill mentions that the Patriots didn't have the money to keep Branch, Givens, or Vinatieri, but that's not entirely true. They did have the money. They chose not to spend it at that level on those players. With Belichick, the way he always talks about it, it's always a sort of, you know, a value kind of a thing, and that's how they try to keep it, because if you don't, then you end up making mistakes and you're chasing good money. You know, you're throwing good money after bad money and you get caught in a spiral. I personally felt they could have re-signed Vinatieri. I made no secrets of that. I personally felt that Givens and Branch were both a little bit, the contracts they got were more than I would have been willing to give. So in those regards, I don't really think that they made that big of a deal. You know, not taking care of that the way they you know, they could have. But I don't think it was a money issue. I think it was more of a value issue. And as we talk about Samuel here the rest of the show going forward, I think that, you know, that's what you have to keep in mind, is not necessarily can you afford to do it, but are you willing to do it? And I think those are two different things. So I hope that, you know, cleared up a little of that salary cap myth for you, Bill. We'll move on to Ray, who says this has been a difficult offseason for him. For the first time since the second Denver Super Bowl, I didn't throw a party, and I barely even watched the game. I've recovered a bit now, and I'm ready to eat up an unhealthy serving of early mock drafts, prospect reviews, etc. I've been doing some catching up via the podcast, and it seems Tom has a man crush on this running back from Rutgers, though it seems he's not alone. How does he stack up against a guy like Mike Alstott, the only jersey I have ever purchased, by the way, or Heath Evans? Somewhat related, what's the deal with Garrett Mills? Well, let's talk about Brian Leonard a little bit first. I don't think Tom is overly enamored with this guy. I just think he thinks he's a Patriot kind of a guy, in that he's got that, you know, team first persona. He kind of stepped aside. He was the lead tailback for most of his career. Realized that Ray Rice, a highly touted tailback coming in out of Miami, I believe, was coming into, and he was better than him. So he stepped aside and allowed Rice to step into the spotlight. And after Leonard was the star, he became more of a fullback type and was willing to do get less of the glory, you know, for the betterment of the team. And I think that's why Tom looks at it as Brian Leonard is a Patriots kind of a guy. I don't think he's like Alstott, and he's not nearly as big and not as powerful. Maybe Heath Evans, in terms of he's you know, the way Dante Scarnecchia described Heath Evans last year, is kind of he's a tailback in a fullback's body. He's more of a speed oriented kind of guy, but not quite fast enough to be a full time tailback. It'll be interesting to see how Leonard fits in you know, starting this week at the combine and then with the pro days and as we move toward April, you know, he's probably going to be a first day pick. He's probably going to be an early first day pick, probably a second rounder. But it'll be interesting to see which way how teams kind of view him. Do they view him as a strict fullback, or do they look at him more as a tailback, you know, that, you know, has the ability to run the ball more often, or is he a blocker, pass-catching type? Garrett Mills is kind of a great unknown because we just haven't seen enough of him. He's been injured, and we didn't get to see him at all during preseason because he didn't practice very much, and he certainly didn't dress for any of the games. He was inactive before he got placed on IR. So you're looking at another rookie year for Mills in 2007. We'll see what the fourth-round pick out of Tulsa can do. Right now, we don't really know a whole lot about him. And Ray says he was drafted with the word H-back got thrown around a lot. And other than Chris Cooley, I can't name another H-back. But from what I understand, the position is sort of a tight end fullback hybrid. Is that correct? And how does that play into the Pats not wanting to draft Leonard? You know, Rev, I mean, they're all good questions. And we'll have to figure out and see how the Patriots, like I said, how the Patriots perceive both Leonard and what they think of Mills. Ray's early impressions are that this is a good draft for safeties and linebackers, which is good for the Pats, as that is the two biggest areas of need. Sign Samuel or franchise and trade him, which do you see being more likely? I asked a couple of – obviously this was sent in before actually just a couple hours before the Patriots decided to franchise him. I asked a couple of months ago if you thought we would get a first for him, and the consensus then was no. How about now? Rev says, sorry for the long email. I've been drinking in my closet with the lights off crying ever since Brady threw that last pick. I don't think that they'll get a first-round pick for him. It'll be interesting. Someone's going to have to give a big contract as well as a first-round pick, and I don't think they're going to be willing to do that. But that's what it'll take to get him out of New England, because the franchise tag is taken off him, and I can't see the Patriots just letting him go, for less than a first-round pick. I think if you got a first-rounder for Deion Branch, you're going to get one for Asante Samuel as well. So we'll have to take a look at that. Let's see. Jake, next up. Let's see. I was just wondering what you think about Steve Smith from Cal, and if you guys like him. Also, do you think the Pats might try to move up in the first round since the top picks are both near – since the two top picks are both near the end of the first round? It's a possibility about moving up. I always think there's chances to move up in the draft. The Patriots obviously love to deal him. You know, Scott Pioli and Bill Belichick have been very aggressive when it comes to dealing draft day picks. I would expect that to continue. And, whether or not they package those two picks at 24 and 28 to get up, that I'm not so sure of. I think he could get on the fringe of the top 10 by doing that. But unless there was a guy, a specific player that you really targeted, that you felt, was a perfect fit for your system, I don't see one guy at 10 being more valuable than two guys at 24 and 28. So I do expect him to trade. However, I don't expect him to package the two first-round picks. So I guess you could call me Brian Morey on that one, G, because I covered all my bases right there. Let's see. PJ is next up. And this is where we get to the portion of the program. Obviously, everybody knew I was going to be by myself. Hey, Paul. How you doing, PJ? I have somewhat of a theory on the way the Pats view free agency this year, and I want to know if this may be true. With all of the mystery surrounding the contracts of Belichick and Pioli, no one really knows how long they will be here. I am wondering if this year of free agency may give us a hint as to how long that is. If, for example, the Pats franchise Samuel, which they did, trade for Dre Bly, sign Adelius Thomas, sign Dante Stallworth, and trade their two number ones to move up to pick number 10 or so, will this be an admission that they are leaving soon and are taking one last shot at another Super Bowl? I know all of these signings may be far-fetched, but if Pioli can spread a lot of these signing bonuses over several years, it will hurt the Pats in the long run, but what would they care? They wouldn't be around to see that. That was an extreme example, but can we read into the way they treat this offseason as a way to figure out how long they plan on being here? Well, you know what? You did put out some far-fetched examples there, PJ, but I think your theory is sound. I do think if you see them get a little extra aggressive, then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see that that kind of information, that kind of theory being thrown out there. If Belichick, by all accounts, Belichick is back for 2007, and then there's an option going forward. We don't know that for sure, but that's what the most of the reports seem to indicate. Now, if you all of a sudden see the Patriots go out and get extremely aggressive in free agency, as if they are gearing up for a run, then I don't think it's unfair to speculate that maybe they're doing so in preparation of them not being around for the long term. I don't expect that to happen. I certainly don't expect all of those things that you mapped out there, PJ, to come through. I mean, that even if they were only here 1 year, that would be a ridiculous amount of signings, high money, high bonus money signings, and it's only so much you can spread out. That would be difficult to deal with. So I don't really see that as being much of an option here moving forward. But let's move on, because we have a ton. This is great. We have a lot of emails, Gary. I told you we had nothing to worry about here. The fans took care of me. They had no worries about me at all. They just started sending the emails one after another, and we'll get to them. We'll get to them. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, webradio@patriots.com. And Gary's a little lonely in there, so much so that he's not even playing solitaire anymore. He's actually looking at the emails and getting ready to get some drop-ins to go.
I always do that.
Is that what you do? Really?
Yeah, I play solitaire, but I'm
always. Is that your diagnosis, doctor? Well, anyway, if you want to give a call to Gary, you can do so, 508-543-7482. Let's see. Steven is next up.
You're full of crap.
Steven is next up. During the last radio show, there was a brief discussion on the Pats' compensatory draft picks and whether the Pats might get a third for Vinatieri. The Pats will get 4 compensatory draft picks when they are announced. The Pats should get, this is very interesting, a 4th for David Givens, a 6th for Tom Ashworth, a 6th for Adam Vinatieri, a 7th for Andre Davis, Matt Chatham, Christian Fourier, and Tim Dwight. While the formula is a secret, it's not that complicated, at least for Andy, Tom, and Gary. Basically, a $5 million average salary gets a third, a $4 million average salary gets a fourth, a $3 million average salary gets a fifth, $2 million a sixth, a $1 million a seventh. It's slightly more complicated, but that's a good rule of thumb. Givens, 5 years at 4.8, fourth. Ashworth, 5 years at 2.6, a sixth. Vinatieri, 5 at 2.3, a sixth. Davis, 1 at 1.3, a seventh. The Patriots would get another seventh for Matt Chatham, another for Tim Dwight, another for Christian Fourier, but the max is 4 compensatory picks. It's possible that the actual picks might be slightly different if the formula was adjusted in the CBA, but no reason to expect anything. Well, I also noticed that you didn't subtract any picks for, say, Rishay Caldwell, who signed with the Patriots. And I also noticed that you didn't factor into the equation, which, and I don't know, I have no reason to not believe this formula that you've mapped out here, Stephen. So I'm not denying that your formula is correct. I haven't seen any of that anywhere, so I'll take your word for it. But I've also heard that the NFL factors in performance of those free agents as well. For example, how many games started that free agent actually turned in for his new team. And if so, I would find it hard to believe that David Givens is going to give you a fourth-round pick when he missed virtually the entire season because of injury. He didn't rack up a ton of playing time for the Tennessee Titans, but maybe that doesn't have anything to do with it. Maybe that's one of these myths, and certainly looks like pretty official stuff here from Steven, so I have no reason to discredit his theory. But, you know, compensatory picks come at the bottom of the round. I just don't think they're that big of a deal. I think that the fans make a lot more out of those than I think they really need to be. We all know the Patriots lost more free agents than they signed. They're going to get compensatory picks. They're going to be at the bottom of the later rounds. We'll see what they end up doing with them, but it's tough. It's tough to sort of forecast that, because you just don't know how it's going to turn out. And you don't, and when the NFL doesn't let you know exactly how they do it, it just leads to speculation. So we'll wait until they announce them, which I think is supposed to be in late March. I think that's when they've done it in the past. We'll see what they do. Maybe when they get the combine all set and the pro days are underway, that's when the NFL will get around to actually compiling a true draft order right now. As of now, there is no draft order. They still don't know who's picking third or fourth with Tampa Bay and Cleveland. They have that coin flip. I think it's Tampa Bay and Cleveland. So there's still a lot of time to go before the draft, and we'll stay on it as best we can. But we'll move on to Renee, because Renee evidently is the Casale Fan Club president. That doesn't speak too highly of you, Renee. Anyway, for the love of God, Tom Brady does not need that. Here's a crazy thought. Maybe he will settle down with Bridget and get back to the order of football. Just might work. Also, poor Charlie Weiss, his luck, not so good. Yeah, see, now that's where I would disagree, Gary. I don't know how you feel about this, but I think that Charlie Weiss got a break in having this trial declared a mistrial, because I don't think he has much of a chance to win this. I don't know how you feel about it.
One and a two and a three. Take me out to the ball game.
I mean, I just don't feel like he has much of a chance. And the fact that one of the jurors, you know, collapses in the middle of the trial, I think all that did was postpone the inevitable. But we'll see.
It's a very complex proposal. And I really didn't understand it.
I don't blame you, Ralph. I really don't blame you. Andy is next up in Sioux City, Iowa. Not Andy the fathead that's in Indy right now. Andy in Sioux City, Iowa. He says, Paul, of all the positions we need help at, do you really think the Pats need to keep Daniel Graham? It seems they have Thomas and Mills waiting in the wings, and we still have Watson. I know Graham has been a solid player, but he has been hurt a lot. I would rather see money spent on our defensive backfield, linebackers, and wide receivers. Of the cornerbacks available, what do you know about the Redskins' Kenny Wright? Knowing the Pats will not go after the top money corner, where do you think they will go? Well, I don't know a whole lot about Kenny Wright, to be honest with you, other than the basics of, you know, that he is a cornerback for the Redskins. But I haven't seen Washington play at all last season. Didn't get a chance to really check them out very much. I will say that I'm not overly comfortable with the prospect of Garrett Mills playing any substantive role, because I'm not sold on him. I didn't like the draft pick at the day they made it. I remember when we were on the air and we all kind of questioned it. So I didn't really like that, and I'm not sure that was the way to go. However, I kind of agree with you in that Graham has been an injury-prone guy, and I'm not sure that he's much more than what he's shown. I think he could be a bigger part of a passing game somewhere if he was called on to do that, but I don't think that would change the fact that he would miss four or five games every year, because I know he has a great deal of chronic injuries that he's been dealing with. From a shoulder problem to an ankle problem, he's missed time virtually every year, and I don't expect that to stop suddenly 5-6 years into his career. So I think, you know, if Graham is looking for any kind of big money, I don't think he's going to get it here in New England, and I don't think it's a huge loss. I think it will be a loss. I think he was a somewhat underrated player, but I don't think that you need to break the bank to keep him around. So, you know, I kind of agree with you on that point. Let's move on to TJ, however, in New Jersey. TJ in NJ. He says, Tom called it. The subject line is, Tom Casale was right again. I'm not sure that we need to say again, but he says, Tom called it. Now the super tabloid babes have screwed up the Pats quarterback for sure. Three Super Bowl rings, brand new baby. Surely the drive to win will be tainted. He's in Miami, then Paris, then back to Boston for a celebrity appearance at the Weiss trial. Then it's off to Milan. Hey, Brady, how about practice? Can't make it today? I'm in the Swiss Alps. Has the celebrity status ruined this football player? Yo, BB and SP, better start looking in the draft for another quarterback. Now, I think that's a little harsh and going over the top. But the fact remains, I don't worry about Tom Brady's preparation. Call me crazy on that one. I don't worry about his preparation. And I don't think, pending fatherhood will affect that either way. And I don't think I think that he's been a guy who has enjoyed his life in the limelight, so to speak. I don't know how you call it, as celebrity status, maybe. I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I don't, like I said, I begin it and I end it with, I don't worry about Tom Brady's preparation in terms of the New England Patriots. He will be ready to go when he needs to be ready to go, and there will be few players in New England that are in any better condition, any better shape mentally to play at a high level than Tom Brady will be.
I'm also wicked handsome. See?
He's also wicked handsome, and he also hosted Saturday Night Live in his underwear. So what are you going to do? You know, the guy has been, you know, these are the kinds of things that kind of make me laugh, Gary, because in the past, Tom Brady would go and visit the Pope in the offseason. He was a guest of George Bush's at the, you know, the State of the Union or whatever, the congressional dinner. I can't even think of the name of it, but whatever the congressional dinner was that he attended. He's always
State
been
of the Union.
No, I said the State of the Union, but there was another congressional dinner that he attended. You know, he's on Donald Trump's jet, you know, judging Miss America pageants or whatever and doing that kind of thing. These things were never a problem when the Patriots were winning the Super Bowl every year. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they haven't won the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. And these are the reasons why. I mean, do we honestly think these are the reasons why? Because Tom is in Milan right now. I mean, and I know that TJ is a little tongue in cheek with this, as we can learn here as we continue reading on. One thing TJ doesn't understand: Bridget Moynihan is 3 months preggers, so then she was knocked up when they split, which is not true in my mind. But anyway, everyone is so concerned about Brady doing, quote, the right thing. What about the woman he knocked up? Obviously, he didn't use the word woman.
You can say that.
Biatch. Is she going to do the right thing? Probably doesn't even want his sorry ass back anyway. Thanks for the deposit, Tom. Say hi to Giselle for me. I'll let you know when the stork arrives, sucker. Well, TJ is a little cynical, don't you think? Anyway, just another advantage the Colts have. Not only is their quarterback better, he's ugly, too.
What's up, baby?
Brady is going to go soft, Pats fans. This is just the beginning. Pretty soon he'll start sounding like Tiki Barber. Wow. See, TJ is not happy. He continues on another thing, and you guys can comment on the apparent pipeline. From the Pats to the Jets, seems as soon as someone leaves the Patriots, they just drive down 95 and pull into Jets camp. Hey, BB. Hey, Eric. BB, kick me out. Can I crash here?
My favorite mix in a salad.
From Tim Dwight to Ray Ventrone. Hey, man genius. Go find your own guy. Sheesh. I guess the Pats are the farm system for the Jets now. I wonder why BB gets... And people wonder why BB gets mad at Mangini. Well, I don't really get that, to be honest with you. Why should Belichick be mad at Mangini because Mangini's signing guys that Belichick doesn't want? I don't really see. Why would you be mad at him? I don't get that. But anyway, we can agree to disagree on that one. This is Ashton in Virginia. Is Ashton new, Gary? New emailer. Excellent. I recently started listening to the Patriots podcast. I should have just read the email. And radio stations by downloading them on my PSP. I enjoy your opinions and love debates among other Pats fans. I heard one of you is a Cowboy fan,
look
a.k.a.
at that douchebag.
A follower. That would be Tom Casale, one of the fat heads who's not in attendance today. Anyway, I have a question for Tom. Sorry, he's not here. On your recent PFW, you don't seem to have a lot of faith in Gaffney. Why is that? Gaffney stepped up when possibly the best quarterback in the NFL needed him to and became his main target. Maybe I'm just going off a few playoff games, but I like what I saw. He even led the postseason in receiving yards 1 week. Why so little faith in him? He will probably be even better as Brady's main receiver coming into the season. Give the man some props. Well, I probably fall somewhere in the middle of Tom and you, Ashton.
I'm just going to say,
I don't have as much faith probably in Jabari Gaffney being the man, quote-unquote the man, as you do, Ashton. But I do think that he established himself as an NFL receiver and the ability to get open and make some plays. I also saw enough examples of him failing to make plays when he had opportunities. And, you know, he dropped a short touchdown against the Jets, I believe, in the playoffs. He had an late in the season against Jacksonville, an easy catch on the sideline to get his feet in bounds. He failed to do so. So I am not necessarily, the president of the Jabari Gaffney fan club, but I do think that he established himself as a guy worth keeping around and worth bringing back to camp and having as part of this receiving core. I still think that they need a true go-to guy. They need a number one target and, preferably a guy who can stretch the field a little bit. I know that seems to be the big buzz phrase all year long. I think it was a little overplayed, but however, I do think it's somewhat important, has some relevance. I think when your receivers are all averaging around 10 or 11 yards a catch, you need to have a guy that's able to get down the field a little bit better than that. And I don't think Gaffney gives you a whole lot of that. However, I do think he had a great postseason and did a great job stepping up when he had to. So for that, I think he deserves some props. Anyway, we're going to move on to JC in Anaheim, California. After JC, Gary, I think we'll take a quick break so I can get a Pepsi. Anyway, for no other reason, just so I can get a Pepsi. Let's see. JC has a couple of hypothetical questions. Do you think Detroit – I remember reading this one when it came in. This one will make your mind spin a little bit, Gary. Do you think Detroit would trade their number two pick in the first round and switch their second round pick with us, give us Dre Bly if we gave them our two first rounders, so 24 and 28 in exchange for two, our fourth rounder, our two sixth rounders, our seventh rounder, plus Matt Cassel?
Hell no.
That's an awful lot to digest, and to be honest with you, I think you're giving up number – basically the trade is the number two pick in Dre Bly for your two ones. Well, plus you want to switch second-round pick, so no, I don't think they would do that. But there's an awful lot to digest there, and it's hard to kind of wrap my brain around it all. But Dre Bly is a pretty good corner. Evidently, he's on the trading block. I've read a couple of rumors this week that say that, he could be traded. He is kind of I don't love Dre Bly, I got to be honest with you. He's one of these guys that he'll make some plays for you, kind of a poor man's Terrell Buckley. He'll make some outstanding plays, definitely not worth the contract that he signed in Detroit. That was crazy. I'm not overly infatuated with him, but at the same time, you want to give him two sixth-rounders, a seventh-rounder, and Matt Cassel. That's all insignificant. I mean, two sixth-rounders, a seventh-rounder, and Matt Cassel is a backup quarterback who has never played. He may turn out to be the next, big thing in the NFL. He also may be out of the league in a year and a half. I mean, you just have no way of knowing. The guy has never played. So I don't necessarily think that's – Detroit can't make that trade under the premise that he's their guy for the future. He's the guy that will replace John Kitna. I don't think the Lions can make that move. Matt Millen's in enough hot water as it is. So that's an awfully difficult trade to sum up I don't know. I don't have an answer to that, Gary. There's a lot of draft picks involved there. I don't have the value chart in front of me to even know if it's a feasible trade. But off the top of my mind, I'm looking at it. Two first-round picks for number two, that's not enough. And then you want them to also switch second-round picks, which means you're going from the end of the second round to the beginning of it. And you also get Dre Bly. And basically all you're giving up is 24, 28, and a fourth rounder. I don't see the Lions doing that. Anyway, his second trade proposal, I also don't see happening. Do you think Atlanta would give us their first and second round picks in exchange for Asante Samuel, Eugene Wilson, and Chad Jackson? Well, Eugene Wilson has really done next to nothing the last 2 years. Chad Jackson has done nothing in his 1 year. Wilson has been hurt. Jackson has battled nagging injuries as well. So basically you're saying, is Samuel worth a first and a second round pick? Plus, you can keep this in mind, Samuel is going to get a huge contract. The Falcons would give him a huge deal, so I don't think they would be willing to do that. Now, if you had Samuel signed for 3 years for affordable dollars, that might change the equation a little bit. But you're basically saying you're going to have to take Samuel and give him a $12, $13, $14 million signing bonus and a five or six-year deal, as well as take Wilson and Jackson with the hopes that Wilson and Jackson sort of pan out. I don't see them doing that. Anyway, I love the trades. Before you get upset, JC, I love the trade proposals. I love the rumors. I think it's fun to talk about. It's useless because we have no way of knowing, And that's why I thought it was accurate that you pose them as hypotheticals, because there's no way we have of asking Bill Belichick on the record anything like that. So he says he's just trying to figure out how we can get Calvin Johnson, Patrick Willis, Staley, and Merriweather. I think Staley is the tackle from Central Michigan. Merriweather is a safety, I assume, that he's talking about from Miami. I don't really see why the need to move up in the second round to get Staley. Why is tackle such a high priority? Number one, Calvin Johnson, obviously, I love. I don't, however, think he's worth trading two first round picks to move up in the top of the first round to get him. Patrick Willis is a guy I think you very well could get him where you are, or he could be long gone. I mean, we'll have to see what he does at the combines and his workouts, but I think by all accounts, Patrick Willis is the best inside linebacker available. So obviously, you know, from the Patriots' perspective, he makes a lot of sense. But again, there's a lot to try to formulate there in that Detroit trade, and I don't see it happening, JC. So sorry to burst the bubble there, but I just don't see it happening. Anyway, let's step aside. We got about 20 minutes to go. Webradio@patriots.com. Keep the emails coming in. Obviously, we're going to get to them because we got nothing else to do. It's just me all by my lonesome.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tac sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild hot Sac-A-Tac sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Oh, now a shot! Unbelievable! 3-2, Taylor Twellman!
Wear what the pros wear, exclusively from the Revolution Pro Shop. Conveniently located at Gillette Stadium, it's the perfect place to get all of your official New England Revolution apparel. The Revolution Pro Shop features apparel made by Adidas, the official apparel provider of the MLS. Everything from jerseys and sweatshirts to hats and jackets. Give your jersey a kick by having the Pro Shop customize it with the name and number of your favorite player, or the name and number of your choice. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Gillette Stadium is open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Can't get to the stadium? The Revolution Online Pro Shop is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player or coach wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Makes a tackle, drives it upfield, to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, Benjamin.
From a first-round draft pick in 2004 to owning the longest touchdown reception in Patriots playoff history, Benjamin Watson has become a standout for the three-time Super Bowl champs.
One of the best I've ever seen.
Now you can get an official mini replica helmet exclusively from the New England Patriots signed by Benjamin Watson free. This authentic mini helmet comes complete with a chin strap, receiver face mask, and Ben Watson's autograph. All you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Benjamin Watson. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to your first 400 with qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Always better off alone, especially with Andy and Tom. I haven't really gotten made fun of all day. Have you noticed that?
Andy Hart, line one.
Andy! No, I mean, obviously they would be probably knee-deep in rocket shots about something, you know, related to my age, my weight, my hair. You know, I'm an easy target, I have to admit. I am an easy target. But they're not here. Andy and Tom are at the Combine, or at least on en route to the Combine in Indy. You can start checking Patriots.com probably tomorrow, I would say late afternoon, early evening, for some information regarding you know, the early goings on there in Indy. The boys will be hard at work, and definitely quotes around hard at work, throughout the week and into the weekend, and they will be back next week. But the Combine is huge. The Combine is really taking on a life of itself, life of its own, I should say. And it's funny, you know, and I mentioned at the start that I was on that conference call with Mel Kiper, and I was kind of interested to hear him talk about his thoughts on the whole process in the Combine, and he got into it a little bit. Just the fact that, you know, we talked a little bit about it in the first hour too. Guys that choose to work out and they don't, they don't work out in Indy. They choose to hold off for their pro day, and it's interesting, I think, the way the different lines of thinking there, and I don't quite understand it. I don't know why you wouldn't just want to work out and meet with the teams and get it all done. I think it's, and there was an article about it today a little bit, talking about it's a job interview. It's a serious thing, and I don't know why the players don't take it that way. Well, all of them. I don't know why all of them don't take it that way. But to me, I think it's a wasted opportunity, and I think that they would be better served if they went to Indy with the thought process of working out to the best of their ability and presenting themselves to the 32 teams to the best of their ability. And I think that the players that do that, I think, have a leg up. And the article that I was talking about, Russ's in Canton, Mass., he references it. He said he read a fantastic story by Ron Borges today. Now, there's something that we don't really hear a whole lot of, Gary. Fantastic story by Ron Borges. About Zach Diossi. He projects somewhere between the 5th and the 7th round. I know he is not thought of as a top-of-the-draft player, but neither was his father. He certainly has a relationship with the Pats. How much interest do you think the Pats have in Zach? Just to fill in some of the out-of-town listeners, which obviously represent most of our audience, Zach Diossi is the son of Steve Diossi, who was a long snapper/linebacker for about 12 years or so, Dallas, Giants, and a little stint with the Patriots as well. He's a local guy, played at Don Bosco High School and for Boston College. He now makes regular appearances on WEEI, the local sports radio station. He's a member of the Big Show. And his son, Zach, played linebacker very well for 4 years at Brown. And it's not often that the Ivy League gets players invited to the Combine at all. Matter of fact, Diossi will be the only Ivy Leaguer this year, and he's the only player in Brown history to be invited to the Combine. He'll be working out, I believe, on Monday. Linebackers will work out. He projects to be an outside guy and has a lot of athleticism. He's been highly productive at the 1AA level, the Ivy League level, obviously. So the question for those kinds of guys is, how does he translate playing against the top-of-the-line competition? And I've been told that Belichick is very high on him. Now, obviously, he's very familiar with Zach, and he's seen him play a lot, and obviously very familiar with Steve. I'm told that Belichick is pretty high on the guy, and would rather people just kind of keep their mouths shut about him. But, you know, obviously he's no secret. And he played in the East-West Shrine game and did very well there, made 8 tackles in the game. He's not going to surprise. He's going to be a second-day pick. And it'd be interesting to see if the Patriots take a flyer on him. I think, in a 3-4 system where they require a lot of athleticism out of the linebackers, I think he could fit in and, you know, perhaps be a project. I don't think he's a guy that you're going to say you're going to draft him in the 5th or 6th round and expect him to step in and start. But I do think, based on what I've been reading and hearing about Zach Diossi, he's a guy that may have a future. It'd be interesting to see which direction that future leads him. But he's a local guy, and been working out with Mike Boyle, who is very popular in New England circles because he's trained a lot of local athletes, and not the least of which was Mike Mamula. Yeah, remember Mike Mamula from Boston College? Probably the poster child for combine stardom. That
workout warriors
that you have to be aware of when it comes to the draft, because he really came out of nowhere and shot up the draft boards. Ended up being picked seventh by the Eagles, and didn't really work out that well. He wasn't a terrible player, but not a player worthy of the seventh overall status that he achieved, basically because of Mike Boyle's work in combine-specific workouts. So Zach DeAussie's a guy we'll keep our eye on, and Craig is in Boxborough. He also says hello to the lone A-teamer. I like that a lot. He was going to email in about Brady, but he saw the article about Zach DeAussie in the Globe today. Being the first combine participant from Brown and the son of a former NFL player, I would think he would possibly have some talent. Listening to EEI on Monday, I heard Steve DeAussie himself say that Zach can also long snap in addition to playing linebacker. Since Belichick likes players who can play different roles, would the Pats look at him as a late-round selection? And that's Craig in Boxborough, Mass. He also wants to wish Brady congratulations on the baby news. Yeah, I do think that the Patriots are going to be interested, not necessarily because of the long snapping, because I don't think that they necessarily look at the long snapper as playing another position. I think if you look at the players in the NFL that long snap, almost all of them have another position, but they don't really play the other position. So if he was that good at long snapping, he would have to be good enough to win that job solely in that department. And I think Lonnie Paxton is about as good as you're going to get in that department. So however, as I just pointed out, I think as a second-day pick, Zach DeAussie could have a future in New England, and we'll see where Belichick goes with that. Russell is in the OC, and he comes in. He says, Big Show Perillo flying solo.
You're making my point.
Picture this. Brady lines up under center, surveys the birth control defense. Trojan Man has been on DU, that's don't use, list for 2 years. Tom should have used the new ones, which contain a buck in each box, so if you can't, oh God, if you can't get the job done, you can call. Anyway, the diaphragm defense is obsolete, so he surveys the situation and sees the circular pill defense appears to be in place. Bingo! We're running the in route on this one, boys. In his lusty delirium, Tom fails to notice, much like he did Rishe Caldwell lined up all alone in Indy, there are too many men in the box. Bingo, Tom is sacked for an 18-plus year loss. Wow. All I'm saying is if he was planning on dumping her, he never should have been running any in routes. Had he been studying film and working on improving his already stellar game, he'd be free to romp with Brazil's top skank, who could be planning a sack of her own. Stay tuned. Bobby Orr, it appears, will always be the all-time king of Boston sports gods. Now my football query. That was quite a long intro right there, Russell, but, fairly clever nonetheless. Wouldn't it be smarter for players to get more money in the early years, say the first two or three, maybe four, depending on length, of the free agent deals than having them so backloaded? I would think this would work well for management as well, because with less money in the last couple of years, they could still hold on to the player, who could still be an asset, rather than have to release for cap purposes. Now, take me out with having my baby from Tom to Bridget. Wow. Can't get over that that baby news. And Russell was in the fertilizing son of the OC. Well, that's an interesting question you raise, Russell, about the whole backload the deal. I kind of disagree a little bit in terms of that's where all the big money is, because if you have a guy who signs, say, a six-year deal worth, say, $36 million with $14 up front, he's getting, in the signing bonus, he's getting a large chunk of that. He's getting, about 40% of it, before he plays it down under that contract. So, yes, the salary, the base salaries are generally backloaded. But that signing bonus is what's important, and that's what they get up front. Now, you couple that with the first-year salary, which is usually pretty small. That's a pretty significant upfront, windfall for the player, and that's what they look for. Yeah, you run the risk of getting it backloaded, but the team doesn't want to give you the upfront $14 million, plus on top of that another $5, $6 million in salary. Teams aren't going to do that. That's a huge payoff and cap hit as well. They try to stay away from that kind of a situation, and I think that's why you see so many of those big money contracts are backloaded. And if the guy plays well, he generally either gets renegotiated or plays out the deal and then signs a new one. So, you know, if he doesn't and he's slipping with those big money base salaries pending, then you get let go. But I think the players understand that. You know, if you take my 6 year $36 million deal again, you know, for an example for the class here. All right, so maybe you have a $5 or $6 million base salary for the fifth and sixth year. If you don't see that's let's just say it's $5 million both years. That's $26 million the guy ended up getting out of that deal. So I don't think the player necessarily looks at that as I only played 4 out of the 6 years for my deal, and I left $10 million on the table. He's now a free agent if he gets let go, and he can go out and get that again. So I think it's a win-win for the players. And for the owners, they have to pay the money up front in a signing bonus, but they can spread the cap hit a little bit more evenly to allow the football operation to sort of succeed at a higher level. So I think that's why you see the whole backloaded situation. Now, not every team does it well or effectively, and certainly not every team does it the same. I think two teams that have done it effectively but in diametrically different ways are the Patriots and the Colts. The Patriots do it, and they're able to stay competitive. The Colts have done it with bigger money, bigger signing bonuses, and sexier, quote-unquote sexier picks and players. They've been able to stay competitive long-term as well, and they haven't won as much as New England, but you know they now have a Super Bowl to call their own, and it's hard to argue that their way was wrong. So little salary cap stuff thrown in amongst the Brady your Brady tribulations, I suppose we'll call it. I like the fertilizing son of the OC. That's good stuff right there, Gary. We have another
Tom Brady.
See, we have another Doucette. Paul.
This is Paul.
This one's Paul, PJD from NC. He says, using the franchise tag for Samuel is the best course of action for the Patriots. I still have my doubts if he will be with the team next year, but at least we will be able to get something in return. As for the wide receiver position, as discussed last week, it appears that this year there's a weak crop of free agents. Is it possible that other wide receivers will become available because teams will not want to pay large roster bonuses? For example, Terry Glenn is due $5 million roster bonus by March 1st. Well, if that's true, I do think that there could be guys available, and I have heard that, you know, Fred Kirsch is the king of that theory, that guys will be available, and especially at the wide receiver position, guys will be available that right now people may or may not be expecting. So that is something to keep an eye on. You know, it's interesting. You can look at it a lot of different ways. It's a very weak crop of wide receivers right now that are available, with the exception of Dante Stallworth. And by all indications, Philadelphia is going to do whatever it can to retain him. So I'm not overly enamored with guys like Kevin Curtis and the like. So, you know, we'll have to see which way that goes with and Terry Glenn. I don't know, Gary, maybe it's me, but I just don't see Bill Belichick taking Terry Glenn back. I know he's been on the straight and narrow for several years now.
He must be in another galaxy somewhere. There's no way that would happen.
Yeah, I agree, Bill. Let's move on. Phil is in Austin, Texas. He says, please ask Andy and Tom to check out Brian Roberson, my favorite UT player last year. He's a defensive end who played middle linebacker for 2 years. He's supposed to be a 40-inch vertical guy and was the Big 12 champion in the discus and the shot put. At 265 or 270, the Pats may consider him a tweener, but he may be a guy they would look at on day two. So he's a guy to keep in mind, Brian Roberson.
Oh, linebacker, discus, and shot put. Bill likes versatile guys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. But I think maybe he was talking more defensive end, middle linebacker. But anyway, that is kind of an odd combination, defensive end, middle linebacker. Usually it'll be outside linebacker.
He finishes up his email, Phil does. In a recent column, Peter King said if the Seahawks could have a do-over, they would probably keep their number one draft pick and their $6 million in cap space. Do you guys think that Seattle made a mistake?
How dumb is Peter King?
I personally don't. I think they got a very good wide receiver, and I don't think a $6 million cap hit for a good wide receiver is that big. And I think he lost the 24th pick in the draft, and that's not, you know, it's not great. It's not a ideal situation, but I also don't think it's a trade that's going to set the organization back several years unless they get nothing out of Branch going forward, and I don't expect that to be the case. Craig is back, the Craig in Boxborough, Mass. He says, I was planning on talking football in this email, but I just can't. Since Brady Baby News has dominated television, radio, and newsprint, in honor of Brady's baby, I will present the top 10 things that Tom Brady could have been thinking but probably wasn't when he heard the news. 10, I just got franchised. 9, I hope Richie doesn't realize that he wasn't my favorite receiver. 8, I wish that pass fell incomplete. 7, where was Matt Light on that blindside hit? 6, talk about roughing the passer. 5, should have audibled that call. 4, is it any surprise that Bridget was in a movie called Whipped? Wow, that's a little harsh. 3, how did I convert that two-point conversion? 2, I wish I hadn't split those uprights. 1, somehow Mo Lewis must be involved. That's not bad. That's Craig in Boxborough, ladies and gentlemen. Don't blame me. Let's see. We got a couple more emails that I want to get to before we wrap up this solo edition of PFW in Progress. Brian is in Colorado. I laid out the money for you for your birdcage liner a couple of weeks ago, and I'm beginning to have buyer's remorse. Just kidding, of course, but could you give me a rough idea as to which weeks the 30 issues encompass? I have to be sure to get the P.O. box before my wife lest she discovers I spent $50 on PFW and not the New Yorker magazine. All right, real quick. We go monthly, so you should expect an issue at the beginning, roughly at the beginning, first week and a half of every month until July. So there'll be 7 issues, and then on the 7th issue is the middle of July. That's our training camp preview. And from that point on, we are weekly. So we go from, say, July 14th right through the end of the season. We'll have an issue for you every week. That's where the 30 issues come from. And then if we make the playoffs, which we obviously do every year, you get a bonus issue for every playoff game they have. So this past year you got 3 bonus issues, so you actually got 33 for the same price. Those are free issues for you, and you can expect those going forward. So monthly in the off season, weekly once training camp starts. He says, I know you don't care much for Paul Posluszny, but he seems to be rated pretty highly on some draft boards. Could you compare his attributes to someone like David Harris, who was rated as a mid-round pick? Do you see Harris as a better option as a later pick versus spending a first rounder on Posluszny? I got to be plead ignorance here. I don't know who David Harris is. I can't give you a proper scouting report on a potential mid round pick. I'm sorry about that. I will look into him, however, if we're interested in David Harris. I think the Pats missed Eugene Wilson's cover skills this past season in the secondary. The roster did not seem to have anyone to fill that role as the season went on, which particularly hurt them in the championship game. How do you see them adding some depth for that position? Who of the safeties coming out do you see as best suited to provide this depth? Well, I think that's an interesting point about Wilson, because I think his loss was underrated. You know, I think that he is a very good player who has not played particularly well in recent years, but I do think that he would have been a major, major upgrade over what they finished the season with. And I include Artrell Hawkins in that group. I think Eugene Wilson is a better player, and I think they missed him. Some of the safeties, I'm going to skip the obvious ones at the top, like LaRon Landry and Reggie Nelson and those guys. Someone brought up Brandon Merriweather earlier. He is a guy who had some issues, some off-field issues that he's working to get past.
And on-field, right?
Yeah, he was involved in a huge fight, but you know, that's Miami football. You get that. That comes with the territory. The guy I really love, and I'm not sure he's going
to... Don't you!
I'm not sure he'll be available. Michael Griffin, the strong safety out of Texas, I really like. Andy Hart likes Aaron Rouse from Virginia Tech. So he's a guy as well. You know, Eric Weddle is a guy, probably factors a little bit later on, maybe a third-round guy. He's dropping a little bit. He's a guy out of Utah that, that Tom thinks the Patriots might have some interest in. So there's some names. You know, again, it's a little early for this kind of stuff. We haven't even gotten a chance to review the tape because Brian Lowe dropped the ball and didn't get us the information on time.
Boring.
We did get an email a little while ago that talked about the Pats cap. You can get on patscap.com. Again, that stuff is all unofficial, and I wouldn't put too much stock in it. And to be honest with you, I hold all the salary cap information. I take it all with a grain of salt because I don't buy any of it unless it comes from the team itself. We'll finish up here with one last email. Who's this from? It's from Jim in Florida. It's a little long, so bear with me. Great show. Always a pleasure to listen in. Well, if you're saying today was a pleasure to listen in, you're either a very, very nice man or just a liar because there's nothing that's a pleasurable about listening to one guy read emails all day. Anyway, he grew up in New England. He's a 40-plus year Pats fan living in Florida, and I appreciate your radio show, your insightful opinions, and interviews with Pats players. Well, thanks, Jim. I appreciate that as well. I'm a little confused by the media speculation that Samuel might hold out, drawing reference to Branch's holdout. First, under the franchise tag, Samuel will be passing up more money per game than Branch would have earned over the entire season, I think he meant to say. And Branch could have come back late in the season to play out his option and move on. Samuel could lose out on the whole season and get slapped with the tag again next year, so he wouldn't be helping himself to hold out. And although he probably would draw bigger bucks in signing bonus and free agency, he will be earning a nice salary next season under the franchise tag and would be crazy to sit out and let those game day paychecks go uncollected in 2007. Comparing Samuel's situation and Branch's is like comparing apples and oranges. Don't you agree? Somewhat. I don't think it's that far, but I do agree with you. There's a lot more money at stake for Samuel. However, he would be getting a lot more money than $7.79 million if he signs a deal on the open market. I do agree that I don't think it's in his best interest to hold out because of what you said. I think that the Patriots can wait around and slap the franchise tag on him again next year if they wanted to. So I don't think that he has the bargaining power to wiggle his way out of town that Branch did. He also finishes up here, says, even though the free agent crop this year is a bit weak, do you think Pioli will aggressively step up and grab a blue-chip free agent or two, like when he grabbed Rosie Colvin and Rodney a few years ago? If so, who do you see on Pioli's radar? I mean, that's a great question. Who do you see on the radar in terms of, you know, free agents? There's not really a lot. I mean, Adelius Thomas is the guy that gets all the attention because he's a linebacker and he's a versatile guy and he had a great year for the Ravens and he cost big money. But, you know, I don't think there's a lot of players like that out there available. I think you probably still leaning more toward, and I look at guys like you mentioned Colvin and Harrison. Well, Colvin was a highly sought after free agent that year, but Harrison wasn't. Harrison was not a guy that, you know, was breaking the bank. He signed for about, you know, like $2 million and change. I mean, he was a higher salary guy than the Patriots normally target, but by no means was he a blue chip at the time. He was thought to be nearing the end of his career, and it turns out that they were 5 years premature because he had plenty of time left and still was playing well when healthy for the Patriots in 2006. I don't expect the Patriots to knock over anybody, and that's less because of the Patriots' willingness to do so as it is. I don't really see the talent available. We're going to get into a lot of the free agent stuff in the coming weeks here. Both in PFW and on this radio show. The boys will be back on Wednesday. I would expect to have a full attendance next week with Fred, Andy, and Tom all back. We'll be talking a lot of combine wrap-up stuff. We'll talk about the draft looking forward. We'll talk about any Patriots that might have some Planned Parenthood classes to attend next week as well.
Yeah, and they'll be making fun of you.
And the fat head steroid freaks will be making fun of fat, bald, and old Paul.
Well, you really went bald there, didn't you?
Yeah, what are you going to do? So anyway, we'll put a wrap on this debacle. We'll be back next Wednesday with another edition of PFW in Progress.